Views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Bob Dio, my friend and engineer producer on the other side of the glass. Together, we welcome you. It's the Buckmaster Show on this Thursday, April the 18th, 2019. You're listening to 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. And of course, you can listen to KVOI 24/7 at kvoi.com. We make it very easy for you to hear our program. If you missed it, we've got the podcast available 24/7, again, at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number, 790-2040. Let's go now to Phoenix and former Arizona Attorney General Terry Goddard, who wants to take another shot at banning dark money donations. Terry, how are you?
I'm doing good, Bill. How are you?
Doing very well. Before we talk about the dark money situation, I know you served as mayor in Phoenix from 1984 to 1990. This news today about Maricopa County, 4.4 million people, the county the fastest growing in the United States. I know Phoenix was growing in the 80s, but nothing like this, was it?
Well, it's you're right. We were just a little city of a million people in those days, and now it's substantially larger. Many new problems. The fifth largest, Phoenix is the fifth largest city in the country, and Maricopa County obviously is a metropolitan area is growing very rapidly, and it's got a lot of good strength. I'm worried that it has a couple of weaknesses, too, that we need to attend to.
What are those?
Well, transportation is the big one. There's actually a vote scheduled for August to reverse the progress that's been made in public transportation, specifically on the light rail, which could be a tremendous check to the prosperity in Central Arizona. Water, I'm currently at a meeting of the Central Arizona Project, which affects Pima and Canal in Maricopa counties, and obviously we're facing a very severe question on the Colorado River, and we've taken steps to resolve it, but it's a continuing effort that will affect the growth of our state in a big way. And last, of course, is always the question of quality of life. Are we competitive as a metropolitan area with other areas looking especially for high tech? And I think that's a question Tucson, Phoenix, anybody who aspires to a bright future has got to take very seriously.
We're talking with Terry Goddard on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Mr. Goddard was the Arizona Attorney General from 2003 to 2011. He has launched a new bid to end dark money anonymous donations to Arizona political campaigns. Give us the kind of the 30-second elevator speech, Terry Goddard, when we're talking about dark money. What is it?
Well, dark money is money that is spent on politics, on political advertising, but you don't know where it comes from. It's anonymous in terms of its source. And Arizona has been over backwards in terms of its law and its lack of enforcement to make it easy for major contributors to both supporting candidates or opposing them to do it anonymously. And I just believe fundamentally that's wrong. No greater indication of how wrong it was than the revelation of the Mueller report today, just a few hours ago, which starts off by saying there is no question that Russia interfered with the 2016 election. Obviously, they were able to do that in large part because they were able to disguise their participation. They were able to pretend to be a lot of different operatives that they were not. And it's that kind of secret campaigning that we're standing up against. And I believe it's long past time that Arizona fix this serious problem in our political dialogue. Our democracy literally is at stake, in my humble opinion, because if you can campaign anonymously The voters are never able to cast a knowledgeable vote. They don't know who it is that's persuading them one way or the other, and they can't evaluate the message based upon the source.
On the dark money landscape, how are we compared to other states, Terry Goddard?
Well, I hate to say this. I'm a loyal Arizonan. I'm proud of much of that our state does, but we're number one. Arizona has more influence by dark money forces, by anonymous forces, than any other state. And that's because our laws basically have pandered to those interests. We have, in fact, if you're a 501c4 corporation, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but those are the vehicles legally that most dark money passes through. In Arizona, one of those organizations can come into town, buy tens of millions of dollars in advertising for or against a candidate, and never have to even declare that they're a political organization. They don't have to have a chairman. They don't have to have a treasurer. They don't have to do any reporting. The only requirement, and according to Arizona law, is that they be, quote, in good standing with the IRS, unquote. There is no such standard. The IRS doesn't walk around giving you certificates of good standing. As best I can tell, that just means you're not currently under indictment for tax fraud. That's a ridiculous standard. And frankly, it's allowed the dark money forces to proliferate here perfectly legally. I want to make that very clear. But we just a couple of weeks ago got the revelation that Arizona Public Service had essentially bought and paid for two members of the Arizona Corporation Commission. They put $10.7 million anonymously into supporting two candidates who got elected. And that resulted in huge rate increases that those commissioners voted for. That's the kind of thing we've got to stop.
How did it begin here in this state, Terry Goddard?
Well, it all began with Citizens United, I guess you could say. In 2010, the Supreme Court said that corporations are people and money is speech, and thereby opened the door for some spectacular increases in the amounts that were spent for political campaigns. As a result, many corporate dollars, much corporate treasury dollars, got spent on campaigns here in Arizona and across the country. Well, corporate dollars are pretty risk adverse. I mean, they don't really want their shareholders or their the customers, and in some cases their regulators, to understand that they're taking a strong position on a political matter, on a candidate, or on a proposition. And so they much prefer to take the secret route. And that, in fact, is what millions, tens of millions across the country, hundreds of millions of dollars have done. They have basically taken advantage of the dark money option to stay secret, to stay below the radar screen, to use these surrogates or these various organizations, which have funny names, but don't tell you anything about who they are. The, you know, Americans for a Better Everything is a sort of a satiric example. Americans for Prosperity is an actual example. Well, what does that tell you about the source of the money? And the answer is absolutely nothing. In Phoenix, just this last month, in March, as you know, there was a runoff election for mayor. And all of a sudden, a dark money group from Oklahoma City weighed in and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on one side of the mayor's race. Nobody knows who did that because they don't have to disclose or why they did it. You know, what was the motivation? Who was behind that contribution? Arizona law doesn't allow us to know, and that's a fundamental problem.
How do we change this?
Well, I'd like to humbly say that you change it by either signing an Outlaw Dirty Money petition, which is on the streets now in Pima County and throughout the state, and hopefully getting that proposition on the ballot in 2020 and voting in favor of basically what we believe is a voter's bill of rights. It basically says Arizona voters, what this proposition would say is they have the right to know the original source of all money that is spent to influence a vote. So any media that is being paid for in order to persuade you one way or the other, you should have the right to know who it is that's behind that advertisement.
And what does the other side say? Why is this not a good thing to let people know where the money is coming from? Why do people want to say, well, we don't need anything like this dark money initiative?
Well, this is a case where I can stand up on my my hind legs and say there is no responsible alternative opinion. But I can tell you, and thank you for the question. And the reason I say that primarily is The Supreme Court has multiple times said that there is no right to hide in our Constitution. In other words, the First Amendment doesn't, if you're going to contribute large amounts of money for an advertisement, the Supreme Court, liberals and conservatives, both together, have said, well, you've got to tell us who you are. That's not a First Amendment right to hide. But nonetheless, the opponents that I deal with in debates try to say exactly that. They try to say that privacy is the issue here, that you, in fact, somehow have a right to stay out of the public realm if you choose. That's not what the Supreme Court has said, which is why I say there's no responsible legal argument on the other side. But they're going to try to make that argument with lots of publicity, beating that drum. And the reason I'm particularly adamant about it is you and I, Bill, if we give a contribution to a candidate of over $50, right now, under Arizona law and for the last many, many years, we've had to say who we are, our name, our address, and who employs us. That's full disclosure. That's the kind of thing we want to have everybody have to accommodate. So there's the only the privacy that the opponents of our outlaw dirty money proposition appear to be trying to protect is the less than a percent of very wealthy people and corporations who want to hide. The rest of us don't have the option of hiding, but the ones who use 501c4 corporations under current Arizona law do. So what we want to do is to level the playing field, make sure the same rules apply to everybody, and make the response of the parties making a political argument in the airways, on the Facebook, on the media, let them tell us who they are.
All right, we'll continue. Terry, we're going to keep you around for another segment. 790-2040, if you would like to join in the conversation on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. More with Terry Goddard and about this initiative. We'll try to go a little deeper into what is in the initiative when we continue with Terry in a few minutes. But right now, I've got some great news about Mona's Danish Bakery. Big day tomorrow, the launch of their new hot breakfast. And they're going to be open on Easter Sunday, too, until 1 in the afternoon. Stop by the Early Bird Breakfast, 6:30 to 7:30, serving 2 eggs, 2 bacon, and toast. $4. Can't beat that. But I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to, and I'll be up there this weekend, to their famous, delicious French toast, because they're going to be using that challah bread. And it is oh so good. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They're open right now for lunch. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. Also a link at BuckmasterShow.com. Not only to Mona's, to all of our great partners. We'll be right back with Terry Goddard right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2, tours daily, biosphere2.org. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
This is Moa Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, 12:21 on this Thursday afternoon on 10:30. The Voice, trusted local news and talk on the live line. Former Arizona attorney Terry Goddard with us, and we're talking about an initiative that Mr. Goddard is spearheading. This initiative would create a right-to-know provision in the Arizona Constitution requiring public disclosure of the name and address of any individual who has put at least $5,000 into influencing the outcome of any election, whether directly or indirectly. Terry Goddard, let me ask you, how is this different than is it a similar measure that you tried to get on the ballot 2 years ago? I think you actually gathered about 285,000 signatures.
That's right, we did. And it was just last year that we did that, and I thought fully deserved to be on the ballot. The Supreme Court disagreed with me about a very technical provision that had been put in the law by the legislature to try to thwart public initiatives. And as a result, we were not able to be voted on in 2018. That depressed me. I was, lifelong lawyer and almost lifelong, it seems like, and somebody who believes in our legal system. I thought it was a real miscarriage of justice, and I was depressed. But many of our best volunteers, including many in Pima County who had gotten over 1,000 signatures, just amazing production, they all said, this is wrong. We want to go back and fix it, and we're ready to go again. And so, responding to that call, I made a couple of changes to the petition, although it's essentially the same proposition that we brought forward in 2018, and we're back on the street doing it. Now we've got a bigger mountain to climb. I don't put any. I don't want to exaggerate anything. It's going to be a big job to get us on the ballot. A, we're going to use all volunteers instead of last time we had a few paid petition passers. We believe volunteers do a better job and frankly are much more legally bulletproof from the inevitable challenge after filing. And second, just because so many people voted in the 2018 election, the number we have to get of valid signatures is much higher. It's 357,000 signatures.
Wow.
Nobody has ever gotten that many with volunteers in Arizona history. But we've got a great core that are starting out. They're already on the streets. We've just been out for 2 weeks, and we're already getting some great response. So I'm cautiously optimistic that this group and this movement, and that's what it is, it's a transparency movement, which would I think tremendously change the fundamental rules and I believe ultimately the results of Arizona politics. I mean, politicians would not be able to be responding to the off the off-the-stage manipulation of some of these dark money donors. And I think that's a very good thing for our future.
All right, let's go to the live line. Jim is called. Jim Kelly, I believe, is with us on the live line. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bill. Jerry, it's good to have to hear from you again. Listen, if you're willing to have complete transparency about who gives the money, what do you think about removing all limitations to political contributions then? Because we'll know who they are. So why not just remove all the limitations of contribution? After all, Citizens United, in that court case, say that money is speech.
Yes, they did. That's exactly what they said. This proposition is silent about campaign contribution limits. Basically, Citizens, and that's because Citizens United basically said you can't cap the contribution. They can use their money in any way they want, and there's no restriction under the Constitution. What I believe passionately is, especially in that scenario where certain organizations can try to totally dominate a political conversation, as APS tried to dominate it in 2014 in the election for corporation commissioners, we at least as voters, as citizens, are entitled to know who it is that's trying to shape our future. And I believe that's just so fundamental that it almost goes without argument. But it is full transparency. The author of Citizens United, Justice Kennedy, expressed surprise a few years ago when he said that he were dependent upon full disclosure of the sources of contributions to be the antidote for the large amount of money that he knew would come into campaigns as a result of the decision. And he expressed great pain, great dismay that the disclosure requirements around the country, federally and state, were so anemic that most states did not do a very good job of trying to find out the source of political contributions.
Terry Goddard is with us, former Arizona Attorney General on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I didn't realize that the petitions, now you've got to gather.
Yeah, we've got a big number, much bigger than before.
I had not heard that. You know, I've never heard of such a thing, and I've been around Arizona for over 30 years in the news business. I've never heard of that many signatures being required.
Well, they haven't, and it's a direct result of the big turnout in 2018. The number that are required for constitutional amendment, which is what we're talking about here, is 15% of the number of people who voted for governor in the prior election. And almost a million more people voted for governor in 2018 than had in 2014. So that's a direct result in how many signatures we need.
Talk a little bit about what some consider, Terry Goddard, the most significant provision applying to so-called social welfare groups that now can spend unlimited amounts of money on TV ads and mailers, billboards, phone calls. Tell us about that provision.
Well, that basically is the focus of this initiative. The dark money provision, the dark money organizations who don't have to be a political campaign filing in the state of Arizona, are operating under the radar screen. They're spending tens of millions of dollars in our elections in Arizona, and they're not required to do any disclosure at all as to where the money comes from. Every candidate has to disclose who their contributions are, but these independent campaigns don't. And that is a huge error, I think. That is a huge problem for our democracy, because it means so much of what we're being bombarded with around Election Day is from anonymous sources. There's no way to evaluate who those sources are.
What state do you point to that has makes a very good effort in this arena, Terry Goddard?
Well, there are a couple that I can point to. States have taken very, very widely varied views. In New York, for example, there's a pretty tough set of requirements, and they really don't have a dark money problem in New York. But that's because the Attorney General in New York basically sets the rules for nonprofit corporations, and that includes these social welfare groups that you referred to. California's done a very good job, but I didn't think we should ever adopt the California program because it's very bureaucratic. It has a big agency that they set up specifically to trace the money and they do a pretty good job. So they also have gotten on top of the problem and have their own set of solutions. I didn't think Arizona would go for a new bureaucracy, so that's not in this initiative. What we do in this initiative is we ask the Citizens Clean Elections Commission, which has been around as a bipartisan effort for quite a long time, over 20 years, to be the administrator of disclosure. And I think that's an appropriate role for that particular group. The one I would point to right now is Montana. You may have seen, Bill, a movie that's been making the rounds called Dark Money.
Yes.
And that movie is specifically about the effort in Montana to find the source of the political contributions. It's a bipartisan effort. They had a Democratic governor, Republican, strongly conservative Republican legislature. They came together because both sides felt that it was just perverting their entire political apparatus to have so much dark money, dirty money, as I think it is, should be called, in the system. And so they did a bipartisan legislation that went through the and was signed by the governor. It's been challenged by the Koch brothers and others, I think, five different times. And the Republican Attorney General of Montana has stood up and defended the law successfully, I think, in three federal appeals decisions so far, and I believe there are several more pending. But it's there they did what I wished we had done in Arizona, which is the two parties came together, said this is a blight on our system, and we're going to fix it.
All right. Terry, we're going to have to run. Where can people find out more if they'd like to be a volunteer, perhaps, to circulate the petitions, or they'd like just more information?
Thank you for that question. Please go to outlawdirtymoney.com. That little website will have basic information about exactly what you said, about where to find a petition, about what this is all about. You'll have a complete text of our proposition at that website, and I certainly hope your listeners will do just that in the next few hours, if possible.
All right.
Because in the day when we're hearing about Russian involvement in our elections, I think there's no better time to rally against the dark money.
Terry Goddard, always good reconnecting with you, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Terry
Bye-bye.
Goddard with us on the live line from Maricopa County. 4.4 million people now living in Maricopa County, fastest growing county in the United States. I'm still kind of blown away by that number. So they outnumber us now? More than 4-1. Anyway, Ben Bueller Garcia, the host of American Warrior Radio here on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Ben's going to talk with me about the 77th anniversary of the Doolittle Raid on Tokyo. That's coming up after the break. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Green Things. My goodness, Green Things has grown from a nursery with all of your gardening supplies. They've still got all of that, of course, over at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. But it's now a destination for some great merchandise. Zocalo, for years, had a very, very nice shop over at Country Club and Broadway, that area. Well, now they are over on the 13-acre site of Green Things, and they have some amazing merchandise. Some of this handcrafted furniture from Mexico, Peru. There's some great European goods in there as well. So there's like five shops at what's called Zocalo Village at Green Things. You can find out more at greenthingsaz.com. Today marks the 77th anniversary of the Jimmy Doolittle raid on Japan. It came at a very, very dark time early in World War II. America really needed a big lift, and we got it in that Doolittle raid, where luckily, fortunately, everything went right in the low-level daylight attack in April of 1942. Ben Bueller Garcia is host of the program American Warrior, which strongly recommend. This is a terrific program. Ben is on 12 noon on Saturday afternoon. He's with me in studio. Hey, Ben.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me here. It's nice to be a weekend guy invited to the big top here.
Yep, you're to the big top. Richard Cole, the last survivor of the Doolittle raid, he died April 9th, yes, at 103. Not only was he one of the, there were 80 raiders, right, Ben?
80 crew members.
Yeah, so he wasn't just one of them, but he was the co-pilot for the guy, for Jimmy Doolittle.
Yeah, he was Jimmy Doolittle's co-pilot, and see, sort of ironic, he was originally one of the oldest crew members of the original crew members during World War II who volunteered for this very, very dangerous mission, and he liked to joke that you know, God was going to take him when God was going to take him, but he never expected, I'm sure, to be the last man standing.
When did you meet Mr. Cole?
Dick Cole was one of the very first interviews I did when I started American Warrior Radio as a World War II, I don't like the word fan, but as someone who reads a lot of World War II history, this story of the Raiders was, you know, it's one of the most storied traditions and one of the most famous actions of World War II. Mm-hmm. And so I had an opportunity to interview Colonel Cole, gosh, probably 4 or 5 years ago. And then we've had the opportunity to interact since then over the course. The last time I saw him was about 8 months ago at a friend's retirement up in Colorado Springs.
I want to talk about the Tucson connection. I did not realize, and like you, I read a lot about military history, and especially World War II in the Pacific is a big interest of mine. I did not know the City of Tucson connection.
That, you know, really, and that's why I was so glad that you had me on here, not just to memorialize the passing of the last Doolittle Raider, but the rest of the story. The Raiders, you know, of the 80 original crew members, 77 survived the initial attack. a crash landed in China. And this truly was a one-way mission that they volunteered for.
Yeah.
And so they, after the war, they began to have reunions. They were so popular. Well, in 1959, they brought that reunion to Tucson. And there was a fellow, a retired General Davy Jones, which is a very unfortunate name for an Air Force pilot.
Davy Jones's locker.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
We're not talking about under the water. We're talking about in the air.
but he retired here in Tucson, so I think that might have had something to do with why we got the convention. Well, the predecessor to the Convention and Visitors Bureau back then, the Sunshine Climate Club, decided to do something special, and they commissioned 50 sterling silver goblets, each engraved with the name of each crew member's right side up and upside down. And that became one of the most storied traditions of the Air Force, where at every union they would get together, they would toast, and any of the crew members who'd passed on, that goblet would be placed back in the case upside down.
Right.
So that they could still read their names. And the tradition, there was a bottle of cognac in there that was corked in 1896, which was General Doolittle's birthday, a birth year. And the tradition was that the last two surviving Raiders would uncork that bottle, have a final toast, put the goblets away, the case would be sealed, and that would be the end of it.
Yeah. They kind of didn't go that way, though. I think they kind of did the toast early.
Yeah, there was back on November 10th, 2013, there was only four Raiders remaining, only three of whom were able to get to Dayton, including Colonel Cole. The other did it via video, and they just thought, you know, given where we're getting, maybe we should go ahead and do this early. So they had the final toast. They uncorked that bottle of cognac and had the final toast in 2013.
Where was the silver work done? Here in Tucson?
It was, well, you know, honestly, I've been digging, and I can't, I know that some of the famous, there's a lumber owner who was involved, and there's a guy, the famous jewelry store downtown. It's a name I'd recognize if I heard it again. Forgive me, Bill, but I don't know if it was done here or not.
Bob Dio, a native. What was that, Bob? Fields, perhaps?
Fields Jewelers.
Perhaps, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So,
but they're absolutely gorgeous.
Where are they?
They are currently now permanently residing in the National U.S. Air Force Museum in Dayton, Ohio. They were stored at, General Doolittle himself donated them, and I use the quotation fingers, to the Air Force Academy. And for a long time, there was two cadets there that stood guard over the goblets, but they were moved to the National Museum of the Air Force.
What amazed me, and I've seen, read about, I've of course watched the movie so many times, 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, which is amazingly an accurate movie, very accurate, actually. By the way, I saw, it was posted on Facebook, a photo I had never seen before, Ben Bueller Garcia, of the Hornet going under the Golden Gate Bridge with all of the Raiders planes on deck. I'd never seen that image before.
You know, and back then, the original idea, Bill, was developed by a Navy captain who says, you know, I think we can fly planes off an aircraft carrier.
Right.
Nowadays, we don't think about that.
No.
But back then, it was never done. And, of course, they couldn't land back on the carrier, so it was a one-way mission. But what's interesting there, Bill, also is the USS Hornet. The attack on Tokyo strategically, tactically didn't do a lot of damage, but as you mentioned, a huge morale booster. It also probably led the Japanese to try and plan the attack on Midway, which turned out to be a huge disaster for them, a huge turning point in the Pacific War. The Hornet was a huge part of that Battle of Midway, and eventually she was sunk at the Battle of Santa Cruz. Her remains, her wreckage, was just discovered in January at the bottom of the ocean. And we did a show on that as well with the crew that helped discover that. So, and I'd encourage you, if you ever get a chance, there's a book called Target Tokyo by James M. Scott that is one of the best books about the Tokyo Raid and the politics behind it. It's just a fabulous read.
I got to get that book.
Target Tokyo. James M. Scott. He's here at the Festival of Books every year. Good guy.
And Target Tokyo.
The Discovery of the Hornet, interview with Colonel Cole, and a couple interviews with James Scott can all be found on American Warrior Radio.
Ben, slip your headset on because I got a call from Jeff who has a question about the Raiders. You might have to turn the volume up there, Ben. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, good afternoon, fellas. And I just had a quick question pertaining to a comment you made earlier, Bill. You said everything went right that day. And as I remember, it's been a while since I read 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, but I believe they were spotted by a Japanese trawler some 600 miles before they wanted to launch. Therefore, they had to launch, you know, they couldn't roll the dice. They launched early. Therefore, they didn't have enough gas to get back to that aircraft carrier, which they could have done had they gotten closer. So I would say that far from everything going right, that started going off major wrong, and they still made their rate.
Yeah,
Jeff, there's a reason they call it the fog of war, and you're precisely right. The yes. Japanese trawler spotted them, so they had to launch 250 miles earlier than they had planned. The plan was never to get back to the aircraft carrier because they had no way of landing those bombers right. on the carrier. The original plan was they would fly on in to China and land there, but almost all of them had to either bail out or ditch crash land somewhere in China eventually because they had that early takeoff.
And I think the reason I was saying everything went right, not everything, of course, because we did lose three Raiders, but I think the expected die rate or injury rate on that raid was probably 50% to 75%. And so the reason I was thinking that everything went right, I was thinking in terms of the guys who actually lived to see another day.
It didn't go as bad as it could have.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, what's interesting is at that time, Lieutenant Colonel Doolittle, he thought he was going to be court-martialed when he got back to the States. And instead, they promoted him to ranks and gave him the Medal of Honor.
All right, Ben Bueller Garcia, where can people find out more about American Warrior Radio?
Well, I'd encourage them to tune in right here on The Voice 1030, Saturdays at noon, and then all of our shows, over 180 interviews, can be podcasted at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Just enter Doolittle in the search bar there, and all these stories will come up on this topic.
When did you start the program?
I took this, I revived this 6 years ago when our good friend Dave Sitton passed right. far too young, and I felt strongly right. about these messages, so... Yeah, I've been doing it for 6 years now.
Well, you've had some great programs. I was listening for sure last Saturday, the story of the Navy SEAL and how he survived. Just an amazing story.
27 shots.
Wow.
That's that's why I call him Miracle Mike. Yeah. And I appreciate that, Bill, because someday I want to grow up to be like Bill Buckmaster
on the radio. Thank you very much. Ben Bueller Garcia, always a pleasure. And we'll be listening to American Warrior Radio noon to 1 right here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Coming up next, we'll speak with the author of a new book about the history of Oro Valley. And this may surprise a lot of people. Oro Valley history didn't just begin like 10 years ago or 20 years ago. People have been living in that area for a long time. And author Jim Williams is with me. He'll be next after this. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hey,
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This portion presented by a beautiful area of the southwestern United States. It's Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just a three-hour drive from the Tucson area. It will be worth your while, believe me. This is a very historic area of the southwestern United States. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. You'll find there where to stay, and there's some great places in that area, and so many recreation opportunities, including maybe doing some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness or visiting the world-famous Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Really was declared one of the earliest, I think it goes back to Teddy Roosevelt days, when the Gila National Monument was declared such. So that's just north of Silver City. A lot to do over there, as I say, a lot of history. Speaking of history, Jim Williams is with us. Jim has written a book called Claiming the Desert, Settlers, Homesteaders, and Ranchers in Oro Valley, Arizona, in 1865. To 1965, and I've been around a long time. First of all, good to see you, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Been around a long time here in town, over 30 years, and I don't recall ever a book about the history of Oro Valley. So you're a real trailblazer in this area.
Well, there have been a couple of books.
But, have there? Okay.
I've tried to really focus on the non-native people who moved here, the different waves of people who moved here from the end of the Civil War, really till the suburbia in the 1950s. Because in a way, even the suburban people were sort of pioneers when they moved here. 25 miles north of Tucson was pretty far out.
So we think of Oro Valley as kind of a relatively new community. And I guess as a municipality, Jim Williams, that's true, dating back to 1970, something like that.
Yeah. The town was formed in 1974, mm-hmm. But there's a community that goes back here. There certainly were a small community of people that goes back to perhaps the late 1890s, 1900.
What was their life like at that time, and why did they, what was the attraction to the Oro Valley area at that time?
Well, the attraction was very inexpensive land. Hmm. The federal government surveyed Oro Valley between 1902 and 1924, and they established townships that were divided into sections so people could purchase land, and for as little as $30, you could obtain ownership of a homestead that was 1 square mile in what is now Oro Valley.
Were there pioneers from the Tucson area that wound up out there in Oro Valley?
Well, it's a mixture. There were people who came from Mexico who came across the border and then shortly afterwards filed for land here. There were native Tucsonans, Hispanic people who had lived in the area since, you know, the 18th century. And then there were a lot of people from other states, from Maine to Texas. And there actually were a handful of foreigners. There was an Englishman, a Swiss, a German, and some other, an Italian, and some other people from other countries who came here. As soon as they became a citizen, they were eligible for a homestead.
So it sounds like the land was the big opportunity and the big draw.
It was the big draw because it was inexpensive. Mm-hmm. Of course, it was also very difficult because of the dry climate here, and they went through several major droughts in the early 20th century. But you came out here, you probably came in a wagon. The very first thing you had to do was dig a well. Mm. Because there's no reason to live on a property if you can't find some water. And they had to dig their wells by hand. And we have records that some of these people dug wells as deep as 25 to 100 feet deep.
Wow.
With a shovel.
With a shovel. Oh, my goodness. Speaking with Jim Williams, Jim has been out here for several years, came out He was a social studies teacher and in public education in the Philadelphia area. His book is Claiming the Desert, Settlers, Homesteaders, Ranchers in Oro Valley, Arizona, 1865 to 1965. What was the attraction for you, Jim Williams, in coming to Oro Valley from the Philly area?
Well, we came for the climate.
Okay.
We looked at the Phoenix area originally, but it was far too busy, far too much traffic. Every time we came here, it seemed to be more crowded. We liked the slower pace in Tucson. We liked the mountain views. My wife and I have both become involved in hiking, and we really enjoy the environment, and we're full-time residents.
What really amazes me about the topography of the Oro Valley area, I live in the central foothills, lower foothills of the Catalinas, just north of River Road. Then when I go up to your area, Jim, looking at the Catalinas, it's like a different mountain range.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a different, completely different feel to the mountain.
I don't know too much about the climate and geology, but I think the view of the mountains from the southern perspective is very different from the northern side where we are in Oro Valley. And of course, we also have the Tortolita Mountains on the other side. So we're kind of a valley in between two mountain ranges.
So tell me about how these early residents have really helped shape the community today. And are there any kind of landmarks or things that we could point to from the early days?
There aren't too many landmarks left. Of course, Steam Pump Ranch has been there since the 1870s, and that's our key example of ranch houses and evidence of the ranching group that were here. The entirety of the town is divided up by streets on a parallel vertical and horizontal basis, which is based on the homestead lines.
Ah.
So, if you drive between one road and the next intersection,
yes,
it's exactly a mile.
Wow.
Because that mile is the distance that was part of one section of the 36 sections in a homestead township. So we have the names of our streams, the names of our mountains, some of the names of our streets are based on those. But the biggest single impact I see is that in the late 1930s and then the 40s and the 50s, people came in and purchased large sections of these homesteads, wealthy people from back east,
mm-hmm,
and they consolidated them into large sections, which were available mm-hmm for systematic development.
Mm-hmm.
Catalina State Park, for example,
right,
is one. That was one big ranch.
Was it really?
Yes, it was over 7,000 acres.
And one individual owned that?
One individual owned about 90% of it.
Whoa.
And that was going to be slated for development.
Uh-huh.
But then a group of citizens got involved and campaigned for the saving of the area.
Mm-hmm.
But the point I make in my book is if somebody hadn't consolidated that land, it probably would never have been saved for a park.
Mm-hmm.
Another big development in our area is a place called Rancho Vistoso.
Yes,
which
course
is a huge, that was one single ranch owned by a man by the name of Walter McDonald.
Really?
And Walter McDonald sold it to other people, and then it was eventually developed as a planned community.
Was he from back east?
He was from Ohio, and he uh-huh lived here in the winters.
Wow, I wondered about that, Vistoso, because that's kind of like, that's a huge...
It's over 7,000 acres.
Oh, my goodness. So what originally, kind of to summarize here, what originally started with these
little homesteads.
Of adobe houses, I assume.
Correct.
They were consolidated, and that led to these huge developments.
Yes, these larger developments.
Hmm.
Now, there were some people who kept their homesteads, you know, well uh-huh into the 1960s. But a lot of the housing developments in our area, you know, areas mm-hmm of perhaps 160 acres, that's still a pretty big area.
Yes.
They were developed from a single homestead.
Wow. Now, where can people find out more about the book?
The book is available on Amazon.com, and it's also available at the Western National Parks Association store in Oro Valley.
You lead hikes, right?
I do. I lead history hikes both in Tucson and out in the wilderness.
Are you available to speak to groups?
Yes, I am.
What would be a good way to reach you?
They could reach me at my email address, which is jaswilliams128@msn.com.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Jim Williams, author of Claiming the Desert. Interesting book about the history of the early days of Oro Valley. That book available, as he says, on Amazon and at the really fine Western National Parks Association store. They've got a great gift shop there if you're looking for a unique gift. It's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Bob Dio, my engineer producer, we wish you a great afternoon. Got Steve Rivera, his program on Eye on Sports, Eye on the Ball, talking about sports from 1 to 3. That's coming up next. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.